Hello and welcome to Wild Time Online with myself, Thomas Janak. I'm on the phone, or on Skype, joined today by Seraphim Angelis, and we are talking about something that is very dear to our hearts, and that is something that we both hope that everybody would do, and could do, and took the time to learn it if they can't, and that's animal communication. And there's different forms of animal communication. Regular listeners know that obviously I'm an animal healer. So there's one way of doing it is the body work and the physical work, but there's actually the opportunity to communicate with them from spirit to spirit, from soul to soul. And I always say that when you communicate to an animal on a soul level, you can have full-fledged conversation. And then the funny thing really is a lot of people wouldn't believe it unless it happens to them. So Seraphim, I'm pretty sure when you try to explain to people in technical terms how it works, did they already think you're a nutcase?
Yes. Yes, precisely for the reason that you were saying, that as far as the science of how this actually is possible, I don't have the answers. I don't know exactly. I just know that with uncanny accuracy, I can have a communication with an animal alive or
or passed on over, absolutely, absolutely. And what I say, I think it really all goes back to, you know, science and belief systems usually clash. Yeah. And me being, being a shamanic healer. And many people, it doesn't really matter if you do Japanese healing like Reiki or if you do angel healing or crystal work or shamanic healing, it's all based on the idea that there is no death, that it's just different paths.
Yes.
And so time is not a timeline as we see it. It's all a continuation of things. So sometimes, you know, when people give me pictures and I connect and bring in or bring back information, I'm not aware that the animal has passed on unless it shows me it has passed on.
Okay.
So it's different, you know. Sometimes people are not specific, and I usually request no information.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I request very little from the animal. I mean, you know, regarding the animal.
Yeah.
I'm able to pull up facts and detail. I find that my animal communication, I often receive greater detail and specifics than I do from human communication when I try to channel disincarnated individuals on the other side. Animals, for some reason, I'm able to get with such exact clarity and such detail.
I think one of the things in my experience is that they're not hiding things.
Yeah.
So you have these layers. Yeah. You know, isn't that funny sometimes when someone comes to me and they say, can you give me Reiki? And they pay for an hour of Reiki, and it's such a powerful tool. But you only get half of it done. Because, you know, they're just hiding things. And even though, you know, they say, no, I'm completely open, you know, you can tell them otherwise. And one of the things that I often say to people, I work on animals sort of spiritually and physically as well. And when I work on a horse, I could basically do physical work or spiritual work on that horse, on this huge, massive horse, and I would need 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And with a human being, you need an hour. And it's not because I'm so great. That may be true too, but it is because I take it for granted. The animal understands that there is healing given, so it becomes open. It begins to trust, so the energy can flow. It's all about the flowing of energies. Now, I remember months ago, I found that so sweet. You sent me an email about an animal you met in the park and communicated with an animal and told her that there's another guy doing it, and apparently the animal liked the idea very much.
Yes, it was a female pigeon. She was very, very interested and excited. She never knew that this was possible. A lot of them have heard tale, perhaps through their ancestors or their community, that humans can talk to them on this basic soul level, but have not necessarily experienced it in person. So they're quite a wonder, you know, when they encounter someone. The interesting note, though, in terms of being open and honest, I do notice, and I find this very, very curious, I do notice a level of complication or, I don't know what to call it, kind of the over-cleverness that humans add to a situation of healing, like you were just saying, they hide things, They may think they're being honest, but we tend to kind of entwine ourselves in a lot of mental mumbo jumbo, and it confuses ourselves.
To a certain extent, it's understandable because, you know, here you are, you have a phobia, for instance, against something, or you haven't dealt with something in 30 years. And you come to yourself or to myself or to any other healer, and you do a meditation with the people, and you say, like, look, you know, based on the colors that I just received, I can tell you where exactly it sits. And it's difficult, I think, for some people to be reminded you're here. And even when you have a bad time for 30 years, it's still hard to let go of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. We're not good in letting go. And that's what I always say to people when you work with animals. There's this funny story. I don't know if it has really ever happened to anyone, but it's a funny story that we, you know, sort of the animal communicators that I know, it's sort of a running gag that we always use, whereby you go back to communicate with a cat, and you say to the cat, what happened? You know, how did you die? And the cat just says, well, the fox was quicker. They were just fighting over something, and the fox was stronger. So there's no big deal.
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah.
So I just wasn't clever enough, and he got me, end of story, you know? So that's interesting. By the same token, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, because obviously we both know it works. It's very difficult to explain, because even when you explain it to someone that can technically understand it, they still often do not believe it, and you can't blame them for it. They usually have to be in a session where they allow themselves to be open and where there's enough energy. But basically what I would like to talk to you about is it's one thing of being able to do something and another thing to do it. And the third thing then obviously is when you do it, you always have to have the consent of whoever it is you talk to.
Yes, that's true. I always try to ask. It can get difficult because I tend to want to chat up animals on the street, you know, as I live in a very heavily congested dog area. And I'm very chatty and conversational, but yeah, I had to learn to make sure that that to ask their permission, because some wife, which is what I was going to say earlier, what's curious is that where I see a little bit more complication to the or reticence to the openness is with domesticated animals, with common quote unquote household pets like cats and dogs. They tend to really, if they're around a human companion a lot, I've noticed they tend to pick up human behaviors, including some level of mistrust sometimes. Or anger.
But I mean, I'm as an animal psychologist, that's hardly surprising because obviously the alpha male sends mixed messages, and they just try to fake that and go along with it. The hardest part of my work with I don't know if you're aware, but I work with traumatized animals, and it's precisely that behavior that they have that gets them into the tight corner. It's very difficult for them to get out of it because then they think, like, you know, I've been there. You can't be trusted, you two-legged guys.
Yeah.
You know, so partly it's learned behavior. The idea usually is, at least from a shamanic point of view, they would call the wolf the teacher. The idea is to reverse it and watch the wolf, and the wolf pack is closer to us and the way we live in families than a primate would live. So the idea is to watch the wolf pack behave and then see, okay, well, you know, this is quite harmonious. How can we then use it for our lives? But because we tend to domesticate everything and control it, we usually mess it up.
Yeah. So I find that. So when I encounter dogs on the street, there is a lot more kind of hesitant or sensitive, like testing of the waters first before I launch into a conversation. And they would sometimes, I mean, I get a lot of dogs, especially if they're on their walks with their humans. No, I'm too busy. Can't chat right now. You know?
Yeah. It's okay. Also that obviously, what I think what usually strikes them is that he can't hear you, the human. It's very difficult for a pack animal to be singled out for communication.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about it in terms of the pack like that. Yeah, it is true. They usually immediately ask, can my human do this? How do I get them to do this, to have this conversation? And I'll be like, well, I guess I would have to approach them, you know, and I'll usually try to size up the human to yeah. see whether or not they'd be a like candidate. You know,
I really refrain from it these days. I usually send my power animals to his. And let them do the talking, because I noticed that even, you know, in my line of work where I had great experience in dealing with dogs, you approach someone and tell them, you know, did you actually know there's a way to communicate with your dog?
Yeah.
They immediately think like, oh Jesus, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Very
no,
difficult.
I get that.
You know?
Exactly.
So when I do it on the spiritual sort of wavelengths whereby I send my power animal, and I do this, you know, they let me know when it is safe enough to approach.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I do to see if they try and open, well, basically his mind up for having a conversation like that.
Yeah, because it does require some prep work. I agree. I often encounter that. I encounter people much more open and receptive to mediumship of deceased human loved ones.
Yeah.
Than animal communication, either alive or dead. I don't know what it is, but people, it's like it's never dawned on them. They're barely.
I think the problem that you really have is that, you know, that when you lose a child, you're allowed to have 2 days off and you're allowed to grieve and you're allowed to wear plaque and express yourself. And when your pet dies, grief is the same. You love, usually when it has lived with you for years, you love it just as much.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to wear plaque and grief and to take you there. And I think this is where it all goes wrong, where you can't be true to your feelings. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, Jesus, get over it. It's just an animal.
Yeah. No, you get ridiculed. That's what I was just going to say. If you encounter someone who's like, oh my God, my dog just died and he's been with me for so long and I loved him, you'll get some people go, aw, which is almost condescending.
Yeah.
And then you get other people that will outright tease that person. Oh, you big softy. Who would say that to someone who just lost their child? No one.
But then, you can see that this is exactly where, you know, when you watch it from a psychological point of view, this is where you see the disconnect.
Yeah.
You know?
No,
so how did you get into it? I mean, usually, there's two things, and I always say it to people, even when you are gifted, very gifted, you still have to know that this is a different energy to using angelic energy. It's a different energy to using Reiki energy. So in order to do this properly, it's like learning a language and try to get the accent down after a while.
Yes.
So obviously, even when you are gifted, it takes some skill and some development to do this properly. And also then, you know, once you've done it, the universe has a funny way of sending you other animals that are completely different, you know. So, but when did you know that you're, well, one of the few that probably do this? And, you know, when did you realize you're different?
Well, I would say, I've always had, I mean, just a lifelong obsession with animals. My first spoken word was puppy. So I knew, you know, that animal, and I've always been really, really fascinated with animal communication, whether it was Dr. Doolittle or that boy in the story, The Secret Garden.
Yeah.
I always loved the idea. However, I had channeled deceased human beings for several years and had not channeled as, you know, communicated with animals on a nonverbal level. And it wasn't until a few years ago I had been doing angelic communication and also speaking with my spirit guides and my relatives who are deceased, because I was in a period of crisis in my life and I really needed some guidance. And nothing else seemed to work. For some reason, I was running into a huge block of mistrust, and I was having a hard time trusting that I was receiving correctly or that even I was getting the right guidance from my family members and guides and even the angelic guides. And my family, my father, who is deceased, kept telling me, we think we might have someone who you'll be able to trust implicitly, because you will sense that they would never lie, they would never overcomplicate the situation. We think we found someone who is going to be able to help you kind of work through this crisis that you're dealing with. And I was wondering who. And then I was hearing this for a few weeks, and suddenly my beloved soulmate cat, who was sitting next to me, I was sitting there meditating one afternoon, and I suddenly heard my cat saying, hello, hi, you know, Seraphine, it's me, it's Barnaby. And I, you know, nearly fell off my seat. I was like, what? And I immediately went to my dad and was like, is this who you were talking to? Is he speaking to me? And he's like, yes, your cat is so intelligent, so much more intelligent than you even know. And we think now would be the time for you to develop your communication, because I think you'll find an innate ability to trust them and their guidance more. And before I knew it, I started very gingerly at first, because I really, even though I'd been channeling for years, was really like, oh my God, am I crazy? I heard about stories, but can this really be? And it opened like the biggest joy of my entire life, which was communicating, learning to communicate with my two cats, who were very gentle, patient guides in teaching me how to communicate. And lo and behold, they gave me some of the best advice, the most solid, gentle, honest. I just could trust them implicitly. They lived with me, so I knew they knew the ins and outs of my life and my daily schedule, and they could feel the pain I was in because they were there with every day. And it began a relationship of such – I'd already loved them to pieces, but this began to open a door of such wonder and such – I was just so taken with their intelligence and their wisdom, like that they were able to know – solutions to my problems. And here they were, these cats that, even despite my hardest efforts as an animal rights activist, I had still been selling them short. I still had been
the trick here is also is to understand that we're still human, and even as an animal rights activist, you know, oftentimes, you know, the anger or the disbelief of what's actually happening is so strong that we're not acting with a clear mind.
Yes.
And that's part of our condition, being human.
Yes.
You know, so usually they just acknowledge it, and they don't, you know, sort of don't say it in a judgmental kind of way. You know, so what I'm saying by this is that when you feel guilt, you can stop right there. You know, because that's not a concept they would want you to feel.
That is, I am currently by that same pigeon that you were referring to earlier. I am learning from her the concept of how to more regularly eradicate guilt, because so many animals do not, I haven't even met one animal that spends their time wallowing in it the way a human does. And this one pigeon friend of mine she's very motherly, and she's quite firm about, you humans waste so much time with that emotion, you know, so much time with regret. And us animals, well, usually she'll speak in terms of us pigeons, you know, if we have to do something, if a new situation calls us away from our current one and we can't continue it the way that we maybe had hoped we can, then that's just the way it is, you know.
Yeah, but we accept it. The interesting thing is also to always, you know, I studied mammals and then studied, you know, other animals, because obviously they all have different meanings, and being born in a different shape and stuff, obviously it can differ to how a cat would phrase things and how a pigeon phrases things. I think the main important thing also for people that really want to know why is it working or why are some things not working is simply because the animal is always in the now.
Yes.
So sometimes you sometimes go back, and of course they do remember the situations that you, or the conversations that you had. Some animals are very reluctant to go over it again, you know, because that's the other thing, you know, the reassurance part that we all do, and that is really important, especially when you work with animals that are traumatized. Obviously, reassurance is a big thing, but we sometimes want it for our own ego. We just have to hear again that I really can do this. You know, and they go like, yeah, whatever, you know, go the other way. So one of the things that I often say to people is, and that I think is a good advice for anybody, not even when you, not only, or not restricted to communicating, once your mind is occupied, there's no point in starting something.
That is, yeah, I love that. That is very, very true. And it's true when I think about it that most of the animals I know, now that you mention it, are not really big on repeating things. It is very much like, we covered that already, you know, I'm somewhere else now.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that living in the now, you know, when you observe animals and their literally their physical, their eyes, their attention span seems to be darting all over the place. Like they don't hold a gaze the way that we do at something, or when we're in conversation with one another, we'll just look straight at each other for a long period of time. And animals tend to dart all over the place, their focus.
Yeah.
I think that's often misconstrued as lack of intelligence, but it's amazing for all of that kind of awareness that is very, very, you know, skips all over the place. It's very, very in the now with whatever is calling their attention.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that we know when people work with animals, what they have to understand that even though they communicate with you, and we always assume that it makes them more human because we have the language that, you know, so we think we have that bigger brain and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think what is really important is that they're still what they are. So if you communicate with a dog, if I would talk to you now in person, you know, I would obviously look at you because it's polite. And obviously it shows you that I pay attention and you pay attention and we watch our body language. It's all part of it. But I can look you in the eye and just communicate with you. And if you look at a dog in the eye, which is in essence, in his brain, a wolf, being stared at is a sign of dominance.
Yes, yeah? Yes.
So they know that. So that's why, for instance, when I work with horses, I always approach them from the side. And before I do anything, I let my power animal become me and then touch their neck. Because this is how they make contact. So I make contact in a physical way through my power animal without touching the animal. Because I know that when I come from the front, it can't even see me. I just startle it. And its first instinct would be to run away because it's a horse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So in essence, when you become whatever they call you, they call me Dr. Doolittle over here, or Ireland Dog Whisperer. You know, I don't really care much for titles, really, because I like to be seen as a psychologist and holistic animal healer. It's much more important to me that people know that this work actually works, rather than all the time comparing me to your Mexican fella. What's his name again? Cesar Milan.
Oh, Cesar. Yeah, you know? Cesar Milan.
Which I think he's brilliant. You know, I actually love him. I saw him on television a couple of times, and I think his concepts are great. There's low spirituality, but I'm not him. I do things differently, you know, but people like that. People just like to, that's what you do, and you have to be like this. And that's the other thing that you learn from animals, that they know very well what humans are up to and can be up to, yet they understand straight away that you as an individual would never do it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, they are. And that harkens to what I was saying, is that their awareness, despite the kind of focus that humans lend to things, which we tend to assume equates intelligence, it is not as if they are not aware. You know, their eyes may be darting all over, their attention span may be, kind of going with the moment to moment, but they are still, they don't miss a beat.
Yeah.
You know, they are very much cognizant of what's going on and what you're doing and what you're concerned about. So it's interesting that a different behavior, mental behavior and physical behavior, but mental specific, different mental behavior can still equate the same level of intelligence. It's just a different path to get there.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is, for instance, that, when you talk to people and they say like, oh yeah, you know, I had this problem at work, they always say to me, and the last thing I needed was my dog following me around anywhere, you know? And I said, Lynn, I think that's exactly what you needed, and that's why the dog did it.
Yes.
You know, because they know there's something odd here, you know, maybe we could...
Yeah, that my presence will be a comfort even if you don't realize it, you know?
Yeah. So that's all very interesting stuff to just sort of figure that out, you know, for people.
Oh,
so, because again, you know, we're not very good in, seeing things that are important.
No, we're not. And I love what you were saying earlier about how different animals will impart even the same message very differently. Like I think of the ways that cats say things, which oftentimes can have so much. All animals have humor. I've found, but
definitely
cats can have such a sarcastic, very witty way of delivering a message that you never forget. You know, my two cats were just some of the most profound healers and guides that I've ever known, and this is in comparison to my spirit guides, to angelic energies, everything. I mean, truly, there was nothing more advanced. No one more advanced than my cat. I'm telling you, that cat just knew the right thing to say. But, you know, like my pigeon friend is also, well, all sorts of pigeons that I talk to are just as insightful. But it's true that each animal has a different kind of manner. Each species of animal and each individual animal, you know, according to their personality, will deliver messages and deliver concepts in a very unique and no less intelligent way than the other one.
I think obviously what is required, that's one of the things why it can take time. That's what I did. Even though I would communicate, I would still have a problem with their sort of algorithms and how they would phrase things and how they would show me things, you know.
Yes.
Because I was so bloody human about it.
Yeah.
And, so I took the time later on to sort of study mammals and reptiles and just see, okay, this is where it comes from evolution wise, you know. And it was one of the things that I did, for instance, like I told you in many conversations that we had, that I studied wolves because they are the common ancestor of the dog. And
yes.
You can see all the behavior of the wolf in the dog. So they have this blueprint behavior as well, doing things at a certain time in their development without someone being there showing it to them. You know, at the same time, because they know that there's something should be happening at that point, and it's not happening because when you take a dog, there's more people that take two cats, but very few people that take two dogs. So the dog, for instance, has nobody to play by it with.
Yeah.
And they need to play by it to find their rank. So people think, oh, they get quite aggressive. Because obviously, as a human, I don't have that thick skin that would protect me from these play biting sessions that they actually need for their development.
Yeah, that's
so that's
true.
That's also interesting for just to say to people, like, you know, that what we perceive is in 95% of the cases just not accurate. That's why I think they find it so difficult when you come up with something that makes perfect sense. It doesn't make sense to them because they can't figure it out for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, because the issue that you have, even though, you know, energy is everything, and you can just sense it, that when you put down on my website, you know, interview with Seraphim Angelis is coming about enemy communication, there will be a lot of people that say, oh, that's brilliant, and other people say, like, what has it got to do with animals? Or animal rights. I mean, in fact, it has everything to do with animal rights because the moment you connect with someone and not something, because they're not something, you know, it becomes personal and personal things you would never attack.
Yes.
You know, it's very odd. You know, so tell me a bit about issues that you have or had with people, you know, sort of taking the mickey and really not getting what you do.
Well, I encounter that every single day. And one of the most common things I encounter is, unlike, I don't know how it is going on in Ireland, but there's almost, over here in the States, there's almost, like a spiritualism renaissance that's happening, a mediumship renaissance. We have several television shows all about mediums. And it's, oh my God, we have so many real life or reality television series of ghost hunters and people ghosts. And so it's something that people are accepting more and more than I've ever seen in my life, actually, in my lifetime, is the ability to channel humans. So that's, I mean, that's kind of a step in the right direction, but people are still... people are treating animal communication with much the same phobia that they used to treat mediumship, you know, deceased human communication. It's very common for me to have just gotten done having a long conversation with someone about a deceased loved one, and then they'll happen to mention that their, you know, favorite cat or dog or bird had passed away, and I'll immediately chime in by going, well, you know, I do animal communication as well. In fact, it's my favorite. So I could easily channel your pet if you would like. And they get this like frightened, perplexed, glazed look over their eyes, like for some reason, it's they barely could get their mind around channeling a dead person, but to incorporate channeling a dead animal as well is too much for them.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That,
and it all starts with this conditioning that we have, that they are sort of second-class beings. I mean, I noticed this. I mean, I always say it to the people, you know, people what they often say to me is because I'm overweight, you know, or I've always been heavy. I'm not really that fat, but, you know, but because I'm a vegan. They always think I have to look like a model or something.
Isn't that funny? You know? There's that assumption. Yeah,
but, you know. So, but this is also. But I say to them, like, you know, that obviously, with an animal, if you want to be a good animal communicator and a proper one, why would they really take you that serious when they know that you talk to them and then you turn around and eat a pig? Because,
yeah,
you know, it's a web of life, it's all the animal kin, they all belong together. So they have less reason to trust you because they know, look, what's that about, you know? How this both work? So not necessarily a necessity, but it is the only thing that makes sense when I work with all these animals, because you do not take part in the abuse that's going on around them. And then what you get is obviously the people that think, oh, now they completely lost it and all these vegans and blah, blah, blah. So they find ways of attacking you in a way.
Yes, it is. And people get, yes, you're really hitting on something there because kind of the same defensiveness I've noticed that people have when you tell them you're a vegan, like they automatically, defenses go up, and they assume that they're about to be castigated for something, that they're about to be, like, you know, hung, you know, you're going to launch a huge criticism at them. And the same, that same sort of strange defensiveness I see, you know, rear its ugly head when I mention, you know, oh, I just, by the way, I just was speaking to your dog, you know, who's sitting right next to you, if it's a live animal. oh my God, you know, and they wanted me to tell you X, Y, and Z. And I've also noticed this big proprietary relationship, like, how dare you communicate with my animal? You know, like, well, are you communicating with
that,
them?
That's what I learned over the years is to, you know, when I communicate with the animal, it will usually let me know, based on its relationship with the owner, when I'm going to mention it.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's just something that I do or did over time because, A, you have a skill that they don't have.
Yeah,
it's very
yeah.
frightening because very often they have played out scenarios in front of their pets that they're not proud of. I mean, you know, sometimes I come into a family. One of the things, for instance, typical thing that I experience in my line of work is a woman calling me, we're having problem, our dog turns aggressive. And it turns aggressive towards the woman, even though the woman is much more nurturing than the boyfriend. So that's usually the setup. They said to me, so can you come over and sort out the dog? My initial answer is, yes, I try my best. What I should say is, I don't have to sort out the dog. I have to sort out you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I come over, and I often notice that the dog knows there's something wrong with the two alphas here. There's fighting going on. Or she may be pregnant and he doesn't know about it. So there's energy changes.
Yeah.
So if there's energy changes, there might be changes in the pack order. So he has to be awkward with number two to see if she would step aside because he cannot go towards number one. So sometimes you become a marriage counselor.
Oh, yeah.
And I say, look, your animal is like a mirror.